Blog Talk Radio.
Pronounce his last name until after word of his earthly demise reached me about 3 weeks ago. And that's really strange because in this internet age, this information age where news can go around the world at the speed of light, we still fall out of touch. You know, it's amazing. Alan was the creator of the Bridging Heaven and Earth show, and he died a year ago this month. But his spirit and his impact lives on. Now, during his life, throughout his work as spiritual talk show host, CEO, creator, founder of the Bridging Heaven and Earth Foundation, Alan touched the lives of many, and Alan was a direct influence on the genesis of our own small community, our own small outreach, Temple of the Infinite Universe, of which this broadcast is a part. And though he may be gone in the physical sense, in the spiritual sense, he is super alive, and so still very, very active, being a part of the oneness. And today, in this broadcast, we celebrate the life of this great and humble man and to the oneness he worked to awaken us to and the oneness that he celebrated as a vital part of his life. And if you've ever watched the Bridging Heaven and Earth show, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Alan was a warm, wonderful human being, probably the closest thing to a living Buddha that I think I have met yet. I don't think he was fully enlightened. Perhaps I'm wrong there. But, I mean, he was a very awake individual. An individual who was part of the whole, who knew his connection to the universe, to his fellow human being, and to his other fellow beings on this planet. On the Bridging Heaven and Earth show, he would speak about the need to bring about a healing, a planet-wide healing, and describing what he was doing with the Bridging Heaven and Earth Foundation and his spiritual talk show as being his attempt to provide an acupuncture for the planet, assisting in the healing, where we can lay aside the illusion of separation and just experience and realize for a moment the oneness. And I found his work extremely beneficial because those of us who have watched the mainstream media, what passes for news on the mainstream media, you know, we see stories of hatred, of conflict, of separation, of Muslims killing Christians and Christians and Jews killing Muslims, and people telling us to be afraid, buy weapons, buy guns. And if you get depressed from watching the news, hey, there's Zoloft. Ask your doctor if that's right for you. And we live in a world in which we focus so much on the negative, so much on the conflict, so much on our need to be safe and to be right. And in this same mainstream media, we hear so little about the other side of life. Stories about people celebrating the oneness. Jews and Muslims and Christians and Hindus and Buddhists and agnostics and atheists and average people just getting along and living life, living love. And we don't hear that side of the story. And Alan brought us that side of the story. You know, that side of the story in which he would bring together spiritual teachers of many different backgrounds and many different walks and many different traditions. And he would sit down and just have a casual conversation. And what really struck me, how he could sit down and just talk from the perspective of love. And there'd be times I could tell when Alan probably didn't really fully agree with a guest that he was speaking to, but he'd just laugh and chuckle and just move on. And then there were many, many, many other times where you could tell that these two people coming into dialogue, having a chat about the oneness in life, coming at this oneness from different perspectives, we're actually just meeting head on and coming into agreement over the heavy issues. And those heavy issues being, how do we live a life of love? How do we see our connection between ourselves and other human beings and dogs and cats and nature and the dolphins? And every other living being on this planet, how do we live the realization that we are connected one to another and that this illusion of separation is just that, an illusion. A pesky one, a troubling illusion at times, but nonetheless, an illusion. And we are not weak, separated human beings. We are not weak individuals. You know, we are part of an entire family, both physically and spiritually, connected to other beings on this planet and other beings who have left this planet and other beings that are beyond this planet. And Alan was a magnificent messenger in getting that that story across, that other side of the story. This time I'm going to go ahead and read the tribute to Alan Silverhearts, which is found on the Bridging Heaven to Earth website. It's at www.heaventoearth.com about the founder. And if you want to look this up and see it for yourself, I have the web information in the information section of this broadcast. Alan Silverhearts, 1947 to 2014. Alan was a master spiritual teacher, a mystic, and a healer. He has been on a spiritual path and the realization of his true spiritual nature since a very young age. Alan never resonated with any particular religion, and from early on, his spiritual experiences transcended traditional religious affiliations. He graduated from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania and from the National Law Center at George Washington University. With great passion and joy for love and oneness, Alan started a nonprofit educational corporation and an international spiritual talk show, Bridging Heaven and Earth, in 1995, dedicated to the oneness. Bridging has produced over 320 shows that are shown all over the United States on cable stations, YouTube, Vimeo, and has featured some of the spiritual community's brightest lights. Alan's unusual and unique personality and oneness energy made everyone feel unconditional love and joy in his presence. He has helped many create positive change and overcome difficult challenges and emotional problems in everyday life. His mission was to spread the vibration and frequencies of love, of joy, of oneness, of inclusion, of the infinite, throughout the world, dedicated his life to creating a better world. Alan was truly a Renaissance man. And I could not agree more. Alan was and is and continues to be, in an altered state and form, a magnificent being and a great messenger to the oneness, to that other side of the story. In our day-to-day world, we see the division. We see the illusion of separation. We have people preaching from the airwaves the need for fear, the need for security, the need for bigger and better weapons, and telling us about the shape of wars yet to come. And we hear so very little about the wars that already are. That stuff is hidden from us, because if we knew the true scope and nature of the current wars that the United States are involved in, I think the average American would probably get sick to their stomach. It's just that bad. We heard about the atrocities of Vietnam, and our governmental powers have learned their lessons. They've learned how to hide those atrocities. And so, currently we don't hear about the full scope of the wars. But we do hear about the fear. We do have preached the need for more wars to make us more secure. And the simple fact of the matter is that war has never made us secure. Only unconditional love can do that. Only awakening to our oneness can bring us true security. And Alan was a great messenger in that regard. And Alan, we're going to spend the rest of this time paying tribute to the oneness which you told us so many things about and communicated to us in many wonderful and direct ways. Now, at this point, I'd like to take a page out of Alan's book and ask everyone to pause for a brief moment of meditation. All right. I'm going to play a short musical piece. All the music today will be by Ya'elah. This one is called Each of Us.
Each of us has a name given by the mountain. Each of us has a name given by the sky. Each of us has a name given by our longing. Each of us has a name given when we die. How many names, how many places, how many
background which stressed, you know, fundamentalist theology, not really too heavy on the oneness. But I was going through a separation in life, separation from my traditional church, separation from, you know, my traditional theology that I'd taken comfort in. And I knew that there was something more to life than what I had been taught in seminary, a lot more to life than what I had been taught in either, you know, the Catholic seminaries or the Protestant seminaries, which I had been a student in for a great many years. And I knew that there had to be something more to all of this. And I was searching. I really didn't know what to call the path that I was embarking on. And then my wife found episodes of the Bridging Heaven and Earth show on YouTube. And she saved a few. She watched a few while I was out, you know, doing whatever it was that I was doing. And when I got home at night, she would show me what she found. And I sat down and I listened. And there was just something about the way that Alan conducted himself. You could feel the love. You could really feel the warmth radiating when he spoke. And I was just struck. I mean, what Alan said on the shows, I mean, it wasn't that intellectual. It wasn't really that deep theology that was the world I was coming out of at that time. But it was spoken from the heart. And it was very heartfelt. And I'd listened to that, and it resonated with me. And this was a message that Alan spoke, which I would have laughed at just 10 years earlier, or even 5 years earlier. I would have written it off as New Age nonsense, a New Age pipe dream, wishful thinking. Now, back in my ministerial days at a traditional brick-and-mortar church, you know, we used to make fun of messages like that, like what Alan conveyed. But after going through that broken experience and that searching experience and that those days of not really having a clear direction but knowing that I was shifting, and not knowing where I was shifting to, Alan came into my life via YouTube videos and the Bridging Heaven and Earth show. And in listening to Alan and to others, I realized that this shift that I was experiencing firsthand in my heart was a shift away from the cerebral world of the mind and theology and man-made doctrine and dogma and into the divine realm of love and love in action. And it touched me. And my first thing that I wanted to do, and the first thing that I did after listening to a few of Alan's shows, was to write him and just come right out point blank and say, "Alan, I love you. A few years ago, I would have thought you were a nut, but what you say really resonates with me, and I love your message, and I love your show." And he emailed me back and just simply said, "Thank you for your kind words." And, I mean, nothing too deep, nothing too spiritual. I mean, very spiritual, just not too intellectually deep. And that was a world I was coming out of. And as you can probably tell, I'm still coming out of that world which confuses intellectual pursuits with the spiritual life. And what Alan has awakened me to, and an awakening I am still going through, is the fact that the spiritual life really is not connected that strongly to the intellect, to our individual, seemingly separated intellects, but it is connected very strongly to the heart, to the love, to sensing that spiritual energy which goes beyond our limited human minds and which can only be experienced, I believe, within the heart and communicated through love. It can also be communicated through the mind and the intellect, but I think that's kind of a pale reflection compared to the love. And I think the love is like the sun, and the intellect is like the moon that reflects the sun. And that's my experience of that. But when I first started hearing Alan's message, it began to give me the direction that I would later go in. When I left my traditional brick-and-mortar church, I was going through a period of awakening, and I knew that I was still called to ministry, just not the traditional Christian ministry in the traditional Christian sense. I felt a call, a strong move, to an interfaith, non-denominational outreach, a spiritual outreach. And where growing up, my first inclination was to be pursuing a life in the priesthood or the ministerial life, my awareness began to shift to where I should not think of myself as a priest or think of myself as a minister, but think of myself more in terms as an interfaith caretaker, a person reaching out to other human beings regardless of their religion or lack thereof, and just celebrating that great oneness. I discovered Alan in 2008, and I communicated briefly with Alan in his earthly life. And as things would play out over the last 3 years, being called upon to attend to matters of family health and playing the role of caregiver to my parents, who both suffer from Alzheimer's disease, I lost track of the Bridging Heaven and Earth show. I have to confess, I haven't watched an episode of it in the last 3 years until just this month. And I began to go in our own direction, trying to do our little role to promote the oneness, to promote love, to bridge the barriers, the earthly barriers that seem to separate us. And we called our outreach Temple of the Infinite Universe, and I began to experiment with talk show radio here on Blog Talk Radio. And it struck me as I was looking for guests to interview, kind of following the same similar pattern that Alan had followed on his show, it struck me that Alan would make a great guest to have on this radio show. So I began to try to look up Alan on Facebook. And it was at that time that I first began to look up Alan on Facebook. For some reason, I had trouble connecting to his page. And the thought entered my mind just out of the blue: Alan's dead, and that's why I can't get his Facebook page. I thought at that time his Facebook page had been taken down. And my wife, before I even said a word, she echoed the same thought. You know, we were just that much in tune. She said, "I think he's dead." And so I gave up trying to find him on Facebook. I Googled Alan on Google and found that, yes, he had died. He died about a year previous. And it was after I got this information that I was then able to connect with his Facebook page, which had turned into a memorial page. And I thought, now here it is, pretty strange that we're drawn to a spiritual teacher and the message, and then we spend a few years, maybe 1 year, 2 years, in my case 3 years, just having fallen out of touch in an information age where information travels at the speed of light. And you can look up anyone, almost anyone, anywhere, and find their latest updates, their latest status, and go a good stretch of time not knowing that this person is no longer with us in the physical sense. But then when you turn your attention, your mind, your mental and heart energies to this person, then messages begin to come forth. And my wife and I both got that same message. Alan is no longer with us. But that's only in the physical sense. In the spiritual sense, he is still being a witness to the oneness and still working to awaken human beings, non-human beings, and all beings to the reality that we are connected. And if two people in this physical world, not really knowing what the other is working on consciously, but on an unconscious level, can have the same thought pop into their mind at the exact same moment in time, I think that speaks volumes to the oneness. And our work in this material world is to try to do what we can to awaken to the point where that oneness is experienced on a conscious level rather than mostly on an unconscious level, where we can live that unity and live that oneness so completely to where matters of physical life and death and rebirth no longer have that much impact on us. That we've overcome the illusion of separation to the point where we experience that unity even after the time of physical death. And we are able to transcend our own doctrines, our own theologies, our own intellectual understanding, and just go straight to the heart, straight into love, where we see something that lasts forever. The love of divine source, and that we are all a part of that love, and that where there is love, there is eternity. I'm going to pause for a moment, play a musical selection from Yah Elah, and this one is called Yishru Shalom.
Yishru Yeah.
Bridging Heaven and Earth show, Alan would do a fantastic job of bringing together people from many different spiritual traditions and just talking about what they did. What's your work? If it was Reiki, they would talk about Reiki. If it was animal communication, they would talk about how do you talk to the animals. If it was somebody on a shamanic path, they would talk about shamanism. And it strikes me, in listening to folks from many different backgrounds and many different religious walks and spiritual walks and paths, that when it comes to the topic of death, you know, that is the one thing that can disturb a great many people, even those of us who consider ourselves to be spiritually awakened, or at least spiritually awakening. But death is kind of like the ultimate illusion of separation. Now, when somebody passes beyond the veil, out of this material existence, it is as if they cease to be. It is as if we are separated, and in a very final sense. And when it happens to somebody that we love, somebody that we love deeply and dearly, friend or an acquaintance, or a great spiritual teacher, you know, we feel the pain of that separation. And yet, at the same time, we speak of transcending the illusion of separation. And folks from different spiritual walks, from different spiritual paths, sometimes we speak of life after death, and we speak about it from the standpoint of faith. And we more or less say to other people, I don't know for sure. I ain't never been there. But I hear that when you die, there's a heaven, and we just have to take it on faith that our dearly beloved, the dearly departed, is up there looking down on us. And a lot of times in many different spiritual paths, that is communicated as an article of faith, that no one's come back from the dead, except for some great, highly evolved spiritual masters such as Jesus or other great saints and sages. But for the average person, death is the final separation. It's the crossing over that last veil from which there is no return. And some spiritual teachers speak of death in that way, just that we have to take it on faith. We don't know for sure. And in my dialogues and communications with people that I consider to be deeply spiritually evolved, great lovers, great celebrators of the oneness, people who come across on Facebook and Twitter as being great enlightened folks, when it comes to the experience of death, the death of somebody that is very close to them, there does seem to be that bit of uncertainty that comes out in their communications where I don't know if they made it to heaven, but I sure hope they did. Or I don't know that they live on spiritually, but at least I know they live on in my heart. And we do seem to approach death from that perspective, the ultimate separation. And I think that's conditioned into us mentally. But when we learn to reach out spiritually with love and learn to become aware of the oneness and our connectedness with other people, and we start to really live that connection, we come to the realization from our own inner experience that death is not the end, that we can still have a relationship with people who have passed, and they can still have a relationship with us. And it's because they're not really dead. The body has died, true, but the spirit lives on. And I'd like to read a passage from the Bhagavad Gita, as it is, chapter 2, verse 12, in which Krishna is speaking to Arjuna. Arjuna is about to engage in a fierce battle against members of his own family. He realizes this is going to be a fierce and bloody battle. Arjuna knows that he is fighting a just cause, a just battle, and that this can be said to be a just war that he is engaging in. But he feels so overwhelmed by the knowledge that he is going to be called upon to kill members of his own clan, members of his own family, that he just wants to sink into the depths of despair, lay down his sword, and just not participate in this battle. And Krishna speaks to Arjuna, telling him about what true life is. And he says, "Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall there be a time when any of us shall cease to be." Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, in that chapter, Arjuna, I believe, was seeing things from the perspective of separation and not from the realization of oneness. And from the perspective of separation, physical death is the end. Those of us used to living in the physical world, in the material world, the gratification of material sense pleasures and sense perception, when something passes beyond the realm of the physical and into the realm of the spiritual, which we cannot sense through our five senses, through our material senses, you know, we think it's gone. But actually what Krishna is saying is that there never was a time when any of us did not exist, nor shall there be a time when any of us cease to be. We continue to be. The body dies, but the soul lives on, and the soul changes body. You know, just like a normal human being will wear a set of clothes for just so long a time, and then when those clothes begin to break down and fall apart, and get holes in them, and no longer function the way they used to, and just get to the point of being unusable, then we discard those old clothes and we put on new clothes. In a similar way, the soul does the same thing with the body. We enter into a body at a certain point in time. We wear that body around like a set of clothes for as long as it works, for as long as it functions well enough for us to perform whatever task or duty it is that we have in this material world. And then when it comes time to lay that old set of clothes aside and to move on to bigger and better things, the soul takes off, sheds that old body, that old suit of clothes, and then goes on into another stage and finds itself wrapped in a new set of clothes, be that energy or a physical body, an energy body or a physical body. But though it seems from the perspective of the physical clothes that death is the end, it's not. The body has been shed, and that has come to an end, the soul goes on in search of bigger and better things. And those of us that have begun to reclaim, remember past life memories, or who have had near-death experiences, we know the reality of this. And for us, it's not really a matter of faith. It's a matter of our own personal experience. But when we communicate it to others, others who have not had this experience, others who have not yet uncovered these memories, these past life memories, or who have not had the near-death experience, to them we have to communicate it as an article of faith. Saying, yeah, I've walked this path, I've seen what's up ahead, and it's truly beautiful. It's nothing to be feared. It'll be kind of a shock when you experience this for the first time. But you know what? It's just like going down a roller coaster. It's a big thrill as you're going down that hill. But then once you get to the bottom, you realize, hey, it's all good. I've arrived. And when it comes time to change clothes, we're good with it. We're at peace with it. We're happy with it. But all things in its own time and in its own way. So when we celebrate the life of one who has passed, I think we need to keep in mind the illusion of separation and the reality of the oneness, and know that we all experience mourning, we all experience grief when we experience the death of someone who's close to us. And this grief can last anywhere from a few weeks to a few years. There also comes a time when we have to lay that grief aside, not become attached to it, but lay it aside and awaken to the reality that, you know what? The suit of clothes has been burned. The suit of clothes has been buried. The suit of clothes, the physical body, is gone. But that person lives on. That energy of the person lives on. And they're still active in worlds above, in our own world, possibly even in worlds below. I'm going to pause here for a moment. Play Hare Krishna by Yahila. mission was and is to spread the vibration and frequency of love, of joy, of oneness, of inclusion, of the infinite, to create a better world. And I think we can ask ourselves the question, how do we create a better world? Is it just a pipe dream? 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, I would have thought that, yeah, creating a perfect world or creating a better world out of the broken world we have right now, that was just a pipe dream, that humanity is not capable of it. But you know what? My view has shifted on this considerably. I believe we can do it, and we do it. We do it by consciously living love, living out love in this fractured world, and acknowledging that the fractures are good. The fractures are appearing for the sole purpose of waking us up. Now, we've been living on this earth for the last several thousand years, at least in recorded history. And we've been living in such a way that we've been waging war on our fellow human beings, our fellow brothers and sisters. We've been waging war, as it were, against the planet, been taking mineral resources and using them for our own selfish purposes, taking oil out of the ground and burning it in mass, pumping that smoke and carbon into the atmosphere, and creating nuclear weapons and other weapons of mass destruction, which have the capability of wiping out all life on this planet many, many times over. And we've just been living like a pack of barbarians for the last few millennia. And when we come to the point of realizing our mistakes, when we realize our mistakes, when we see the fractures, when we can see the environment on the verge of collapse, and we can see our economy once again on the verge of collapse, and we see our relationships, family relationships, strained to the breaking point, and divorces becoming so widespread, even amongst good church members and bad church members alike, and we just see the damage of nation rising against nation and constant, unending warfare. It's a good thing. That sounds crazy, but it's a good thing. Why? Because it wakes us up to the realization that we've been doing things wrong and we need to change. We need to set aside the fear of separation and fear in general, in our attachments in the physical sense. And we need to awaken to the love that never dies, the love which always is, the unconditional love of the divine source, by whatever name we know this source, and celebrating that love, acknowledging that we are a part of that love, we are the energy of that love, we are created out of that love. And then when we have awakened to that point of realizing that we are love, then we need to do what Alan did and do whatever we can to communicate that simple message to a fallen world, to a culture that does not like simplicity, and to a culture that likes to overcomplicate things, and just say, look, what you're worried about, that's not the true picture. This is the true picture. Set your worries aside and come alive in the love of the divine source. And our mission, as I see it, is to be messengers of this love and of this unity, and focus on bringing the message of love and unity into the world in creative and positive ways, acknowledging the fact that our past has not been perfect. Now, we were not born great saints. Maybe a few people were. I certainly was not. But we can change. People can and do change. I can change. You can change. Everyone around us can change. Remember the life of George Wallace, who, growing up, I thought George Wallace was, to put it in a simple word, an SOB, you know. We didn't get along politically. I didn't like his views on civil rights, didn't like his views on segregation. George Wallace was a Southern governor who loved segregation. And one of his key phrases that he preached was segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. And that's what he truly believed in his heart, that whites and blacks in the South, and I think if he had his way all throughout the United States, were supposed to be separate, forever separate, perhaps equal, but forever separate. And that civil rights, equal rights, and all that jazz was just nonsense. But you know what? George Wallace, he changed. He was campaigning for president, I believe it was sometime in the 1970s. And a lone man with a gun shot him. He didn't kill him, but he put him in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. And as George Wallace was recovering from his gunshot wounds, and facing the realization that he was going to spend the rest of his life in a wheelchair, that man began to change. He laid aside his previous beliefs that segregation was the way to go. He began to become a proponent of civil liberties, of civil rights, of equal rights for all people, regardless of their skin color, regardless of their political persuasion, regardless of their station in life. And he began to surround himself with people of all colors, acknowledging the fact that we're all brothers and sisters. And he had a shift. He had a change. For him, it took a few gunshots to sever his spinal cord, to put him in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. And it seemed like a great tragedy. But for him, it was the moment of his awakening, when he could look out at his fellow human beings, those who could walk and those who were in wheelchairs like himself, and realize, you know what? Under the skin, we are all brothers and sisters. And he renounced his old ways of being a proponent of segregation and began to become a proponent for love, equal rights, and unity. And this awakening didn't happen all at once. For him, it took quite a few years. And it's the same for all of us. This awakening occurs gradually over the course of our lives. But it allows us to realize that we can take our past, we can make peace with it, and we can accept it for what it is, training for better things to come, learn from the errors of our past ways, and embrace a brighter, better future. All brought about by being loving and patient, first with ourselves, as we grow and evolve and develop into fuller, happier, better human beings, and more mature spiritual beings. And then we take this same love and patience that we give to ourselves to facilitate our growth, and we extend that out to others. And finally, we develop that sense of realization that the love we give to ourselves, and the love that we give to others, and the love that we give to the divine source, in whatever way we understand the divine source, all these loves are one. By loving others, we also love ourselves. By loving ourselves properly, we also love others. And in loving others and ourselves, and treating others as we would ourselves would want to be treated. In that way, we also show our love for the divine source and all of creation, which is held together in unity by the energy of the love of this divine source. Alan, you have joined the infinite source of love and beauty. Help us with your inspiration to live this mission out. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Be our guidance. Be our inspiration. Let us still feel that love. Project that love out into the world around us. So let it be.
We got a lot.